And welcome to the last Drinking on the Last Frontier of 2020. I'm your host here, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. Well, we've got a lot of interviews and segments for you this month, so let's dive right in with beer news. Things tend to slow down in the beer world during the holidays, but we've had a few items of note. On December 17th, Kenai River Brewing announced that it had just finished its millionth can on its current Cody Manufacturing canning line, which was installed when the brewery moved to its current location. The brewery owned two earlier canners, so its totals of cans produced is well over 1 million. Speaking of canning, Girdwood Brewing just took delivery of a Wild Goose canning line. It plans to begin producing 16-ounce can versions of its award-winning beers in the near future. Still on the subject of cans, Anchorage Brewing Company's canned version of its fantastic A Deal with the Devil barley wine was selected as the best craft beer label of 2020. The 16-ounce cans were also dipped in black wax, but upside down. This was an obvious jab at the purists who claim you can only package fine beverages in glass. Only 4,272 of the 16-ounce cans were made, all of which sold out in minutes, despite the asking price of $50 per can. The results of the 2020 U.S. Open Beer Championship were announced in early December, and Barnaby Brewing of Juneau finished fourth overall, after earning awards for four of its beers. We'll be interviewing owner Matt Barnaby later in the show. Bear Paw River Brewing in Wasilla just celebrated its fifth anniversary this month. Construction on its new location on the Parks Highway in downtown Wasilla is proceeding. That's it for beer news. Coming up next, we'll have an interview with Matt Barnaby, owner and brewer of Barnaby Brewing in Juneau. Matt, how are you doing today?
Oh, doing well, yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time. First up, let's talk about your wins at the U.S. Beer Open.
Yeah, so we had four beers that placed in the competition. We had two golds. One was for our third anniversary, pineapple jalapeno, tequila barrel-aged imperial sour. A little bit of a mouth play there. And then our other gold medal was our Berry Fresh. It's a blackberry and raspberry saison. Silver place, we placed with our Whatever Forever German Hefeweizen. And in third place, our smoked Rosh beer-ish. It's not necessarily true to the traditional German style, but it most resembles what you would think of a German Rosh beer.
You finished fourth overall, right, among all the breweries?
Yeah, so the U.S. Open gives points based on medals earned, and we ended up finishing there in fourth place.
Well, that's quite a feather in your cap, so very well-earned congratulations on that one. I think the last time we spoke, if I couldn't quite remember, I think you had just reopened, or you were just getting ready to reopen after the fire. So why don't you tell folks about your new location and your setup there, what you're operating with these days in Juneau?
Yeah, so we are located directly behind City Hall at 165 Shattuck Way. We operate on a three-barrel all-electric brew system. our fermentation capacity in stainless steel. We have 4 3-barrel fermenters and a 7 that we'll double batch into. And then we've got a couple puncheons, wine puncheons, that we also ferment. So that gives us a little extra fermentation capacity, but those beers, you know, we use wild yeast in those. So we let those ferment for about a year. So I don't really think of them as being fermentation capacity.
Yeah, more of a wood aging capacity, right?
Right.
How have you been handling COVID? How hard has it hit you guys there? I mean, you're primarily sell just about everything right out of your tap room, right?
Yeah, just about everything's out of the tap room. We do have a couple accounts for the folks that are willing to kind of eat the cost of shipping. We do ship some beer. But yeah, COVID, it's been a bit of a roller coaster here in Juneau. The city's kind of gone back and forth. We've been shut down a couple different times, at least to where we could only do to-go options. And then they allow some capacity of indoor seating. You know, it's hit or miss. It seems like as soon as we start getting some momentum again, the city comes out and shuts us back down. And then even when we're allowed to operate with on-site consumption, it just takes time to kind of rebuild that momentum. So it's definitely been a roller coaster, but we're trudging through it.
What have you got for your plans in the near to long term? I mean, you guys have been reopened for 2 years, something like that?
It'll be 2 years this spring, yeah.
Okay, 2 years come the spring. So, and obviously this last year will go down in the books as the lost year. But what are you looking for the, you know, the foreseeable future, assuming we get our arms wrapped around the COVID here in the next few months?
Yeah, so a lot of it kind of depends on what's happening worldwide and nationwide. We are a brewery that definitely relies on tourism. You know, we're in a city of 30,000 people with 4 breweries. And so you start doing the math of that 30,000, you know, there's kids involved in that number and people that just don't drink beer. So we rely heavily on tourism. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens in the next couple months as far as at a world and national level, and I guess at a state level too. But what's sort of exciting for us right now is the beers that we put into barrels about a year, 2 years ago are going to start working their way out. So we're really excited. A lot of our barrel age stuff is going to be coming out. And as a home brewer, that was sort of my, I don't want to say expertise, but sort of the niche that I seem to do really well in. So we've got a lot of those barrel age stuff, a lot of the wild fermented beers that we actually had 2 beers just come out. As soon as we bottled them, we filled those barrels back up. So kind of the immediate future is a lot of these passion projects that have been in the works for a year or two are starting to kind of make their way out into bottles.
Well, why don't you tell us about those a little bit? Your bottles, are you going to distribute them at all, or are you going to sell them straight out of your tap room? And then what are your options? What have you been bottling?
Yeah, so right now it's all out of our tap room. Like we said, if somebody approached us and said, hey, we're willing to eat the cost of shipping, we'd love to get our beers out there. It's not anything particular to me, just the economics of trying to get beer out of Juneau, especially in bottles. You know, bottles are not light. So our most recent releases, we had a raspberry, we call it lambic inspired, but raspberry lambic-ish ale. And then our Flanders Red both came out super happy. We think they're great beers. We bottle conditioned. So just a lot of good flavors developed in both of those beers. And then barrel age wise, we've got a habanero stout that's going to be coming out that we aged in some whiskey barrels. And then we have our 4-year anniversary beer. So we're kind of taking inspiration with what we did with the third year. And we made one batch and split it up into 4 different. So our third year, we did 3 beers out of the same batch. Our fourth year, we're going to do 4 different beers out of the same batch. It's going to be our barley wine that we aged in 4 different barrels. So we've got 3 different brandy barrels. Off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure it's cherry, peach, and apple. And then we have a maple syrup barrel, all that originally had bourbon in them.
Okay. Interesting. So I kind of missed that. Is that going to be 4 different beers, or are you going to blend the 4 beers into one?
There'll be 4 different beers.
Four different beers. So like 4 different finishes. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Cool. So what kind of hours are you keeping these days? I mean, I recognize that we're under a lot of limitations, but people are looking to come by and check you out when they're in Juneau. How many days of the week are you open?
Yeah, so right now we kind of maintained our winter hours and through the summertime and haven't changed those since. So we are currently Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 4 to 8, and then on Saturdays, 2 to 8.
So have you got any plans? You guys don't, if memory serves, you guys don't do any food, right?
We don't do food, nope. We just got a popcorn machine.
Okay.
So we can make some popcorn for you.
So I was just wondering if you had any plans to move that way in the future.
Not at this time. I mean, with sort of all the uncertainty, we're trying to kind of play it. I don't want to say play it safe financially, but we're not making any big moves. Any big moves that we were planning on making have definitely been put on the back burner. So not at this time.
That's pretty understandable for a lot of folks this time. So anything else going on? Anything else you want to share with our listeners? Any other awards or anything that I haven't heard about or anything you want to tell them about?
Yeah, so it's been a while since we talked. We did enter the Alpha King competition that's put on by Three Floyds and Yakima Chiefs Hops. It's an IPA-only competition. The limit to 150 entries. But we actually ended up placing in the top 20 in that competition. So somewhere between 20th and 4th place, we put our double IP into that competition. So definitely caught us off guard. We're not really known as an IPA brewery, and so the fact that we were able to get some recognition there was pretty exciting.
Is that a beer that you typically have on tap, or is it just one that you make infrequently?
It's we try to at least once a year make it. It's our double IPA. We call it Hipster Juice Box. Pretty expensive beer to make. And so it's not a year round beer for us, but we try to put it out at least once a year.
Well, great. Great. So I would ask you about beer festivals, but we all know that those aren't happening anytime these days. Maybe the Haynes Festival this year, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, once again, if it's happening, we'll definitely be there. Great thing about the folks there at the Haynes Beer Fest is, you know, they're going to use extreme caution. They seem like very responsible people when it comes to that. So I think, like kind of our production, the folks there in Haynes are probably kind of waiting to see what happens in the next 2 or 3 months. And, you know, as far as the vaccine and worldwide, what's going on. You know, that is an international beer fest with our folks coming over from Canada. So I guess the Canadian government probably plays a part in that also. I know they've got some pretty strict restrictions as far as entering the country. So,
yeah. All righty. Well, hey, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. You know, stay safe, stay healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, if anybody up there in the great north is interested in stocking our beer, feel free to reach out to us because we'd love to spread the joy.
Sounds good. Well, thanks again for talking to us and congratulations on your victories.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, this is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I think most people would agree that 2020 has been a pretty lousy year. While things haven't been horrendous for me personally, I've still missed out on plenty of things that I love to do, like being able to spend time with my grandkids in Seattle or visiting my mother in Florida. And when it comes to craft beer, I haven't sat down in a brewery tasting room or a brew pub and had a beer since February. Still, one thing this year has been good for is lots of solitary contemplation. For me, part of that contemplation has been a reexamination of what I most enjoy about beer. And I'm not talking about the social aspects or supporting local businesses or any of the other elements that make craft beer so special. No, I'm talking about the beer itself. So here's what I've come up with. It's easy to feel the impact and complexity of Imperial Stouts and Triple IPAs. Their sensory qualities blast you with layers of malt plus the bitter power and aromatic richness of hops. But what about lagers like Pilsners? You know, beers that taste like beer rather than bubblegum, fruit juice, sour candies, coffee, bourbon, or oak barrels. Pilsners may be delicate and easy, but they're not simple. Intensity is not the same as complexity. They are not Instagram friendly. You need more than a few sips to pass judgment on a beer in such a subtle style. It takes some time to peel apart the layers. Drinkability means you can have more than one. To find that in a characterful beer is a delight. Stylistically, these beers present a small target for the brewer, so the recipe choices are limited. Only the palest malts will brew a straw or golden-colored beer. Hops, while important, have clearly defined roles of being subtle and noble and quintessentially European in character. Lager yeast is the least flavorful of all brewing yeast because it ferments cool to limit the production of yeast-specific flavors such as fruity esters. Step outside these boundaries and your beer stops being a pilsner and becomes something else. Despite these limitations, a good brewer can stay inside the box while creating something with depth and personality. Most professional brewers I know consider a perfect pilsner to be the peak of their art and craft. They know how difficult it is to brew something that is so easy to enjoy, but that, with reflection, has secrets to share. That's why pilsners are brewers' beers. As an aside, I've been a home brewer for over 30 years, yet I've never turned my hand to making a pilsner. Why not? Because I'm a realist about both my skill level and the capabilities of my homebrewing equipment. To quote Detective Dirty Harry Callahan, a man's got to know his limitations. Pale beers have been brewed in various times and places over the millennia, but something special happened in 1842 in Pilsen, Bohemia, now a part of the Czech Republic. The town fathers had a brewery built, and someone had the idea of combining a newly developed pale malt with a dose of Saaz hops and fermenting it with lager yeast. It was a sensation. Beer styles often evolve gradually, hitting their stride over years or even decades. Not this one. The innovation, Pilsner, changed beer forever. If you're interested in the detail of how it all happened, I recommend the book Pilsner by Tom Acitelli that I pitched in a beer gear segment a couple of months ago. Because they are so pale, Pilsners are highly dependent upon their base malt. Pilsner-style malt is available worldwide, but there are regional differences. European Pilsner malts are usually more aromatic, but are generally the most expensive. Best Malts in Germany, for example, makes a Heidelberg malt of very low color, and along with that comes a clean, grassy hay note. For more than a century, American malting barley was bred for the needs of large breweries. What they wanted, in addition to economy, was neutral malt, a word that can be interpreted as bland. So North American Pilsner malt, most commonly made from Metcalf or Copeland barley strains, will have a delicate flavor, sometimes with a bit of white bread and a hint of grassiness. You won't find that malted milk aroma that many European malts have. Fortunately, growers have recently bred new varieties that are much more flavorful in the glass, with craft beer in mind. Synergy from Montana State University promises and delivers a European character. Full Pint, developed at Oregon State, is described as having a fresh salted popcorn flavor, but to me it seems to be intermediate between the standard U.S. Pilsner malt and European types. Many brewers also use super pale Carapillus-type crystal malt that can add a little extra body, although it can be hard to notice the effect when you drink the beer. A few percent of Vienna or a light crystal can add a nice depth and more malty, sweet caramel flavors. Anything darker, Munich malt, for example, starts to work against the style with too much toasty character. Virtually all Pilsners were originally brewed with a decoction process like the rest of the lager family. The original, Pilsner Urquell, still uses a triple decoction mash. In the days when metal vessels were prohibitively expensive, this technique employed a wooden mash tun along with a copper kettle to heat a portion of the mash to boiling before adding it back, creating temperature steps in the mash. Because decocting involved a fixed volume of boiling mash, the temperature steps could be reliable in an age before thermometers. It's time-consuming and energy-intensive, which is why the practice is less common today, outside of some German breweries and virtually all Czech ones. It also adds a bit of color and a hint of caramel, acceptable style traits in Bohemian Pilsners. Outside of the neutral rice or corn used in American-style mass-market lagers, the use of adjuncts such as wheat or oats in classic pilsners is rare to the point of heresy. To do so, after all, would be a violation of the Reinheitsgebot, the German purity law. Classic pilsner hops are called noble, a quality that is much prized, little understood, and gerrymandered beyond any real meaning. The title is upon four regional varieties: Hallertauer, Mittelfrau, Saaz, Tettnang, and Spalt. The last three are more closely related to each other than to Hallertau and present a bright, super clean hop aroma we don't really have good words for. The classic descriptor is spicy, but to me this is just a placeholder for don't know what else to call it hoppy. Hallertau veers much more into the herbal with hints of thyme or mint. In a crisp, super pale beer, Hallertau can really nail its dry, refreshing character. There have been many newer hops bred all over the world from German and Czech parentage. These upgrade the classics in terms of yield, hardiness, and other agricultural characteristics, better adapting them to their new homes. Varieties such as Liberty, Saphir, Pearl, Mount Hood, Crystal, Pacifica, and others can come pretty close to the classics, but may be a bit bolder than their progenitors, so they need to be used judiciously. The whole idea of lager yeast is that it shouldn't add much of anything. Just get out of the way and let the ingredients shine. Working at the bottom end of its temperature range, the yeast produces very little in the way of fruity esters, although I've seen well-trained noses pick them out. The same goes for spicy phenols, which are rarer still. Some lagers do show a bit of sulfur, either a burnt match sulfur dioxide or a rotten egg hydrogen sulfide. They're an expected part of lagers, but fortunately they dissipate quickly and don't detract from the experience. A long cold conditioning adds smoothness. The result is a beer that's almost unrivaled in the beauty of appearance, its clarity of flavor, and its drinkability, or what our British friends call Moorishness. It pairs acceptably with almost any food and spectacularly well with many dishes. And finally, to those who can appreciate it, it represents the pinnacle of brewing skill. For in a beer so stripped down and clean, there is little room to conceal even the slightest imperfection. Errors which might pass unnoticed in ales loaded with hops, specialty grains, and barrel aging stand out like a sore thumb in a pilsner. So this is where my solitary contemplation has led me. While I'm not about to stop drinking IPAs, porters, and stouts and other big beers, I must tip my beer aficionado's cap to the brewers out there who have the guts to make pilsners. There are some fine pilsners produced locally here in Alaska. Midnight Sun cans its Wolfpack Pilsner, King Street does the same with its Pilsner, and Denali Brewing also produces its Petersville Pilsner in cans. However, if you live in the Central Peninsula, count yourself fortunate, because for my money, the best Pilsner in Alaska is available in Soldotna. If you have any doubt, stop in to St. Elias Brewing Company and sample their Czech Pilsner. Fresh Pilsner is the best Pilsner, and it doesn't get any fresher than that. So with that thought, I say so long 2020, and let's raise a toast to 2021. May it be a better year, and may we all enjoy lots of Pilsner in it.